Hello everyone and welcome to episode 42 of season 1 Reading with Grace, where we will continue reading The Unwanted's Island of Legends. Today we will be picking up from chapter 16, but first a recap of chapters 11 through 15. Alex confronted Aaron at the palace, who told him he was cutting off all entrances from Quill and Artemy for Quill's safety. Alex made sure to punch Aaron in the face before he left. Before Alex went straight back to Artemy, though, he stopped by the graveyard of Quill to visit Mr. Today. After some consideration, Aaron decided to visit the jungle again, thinking he may be able to control the creatures. Alex met up with his friends, and they talked about how the battle with Warbler went, and also about leaving soon to save Sky and Crow's mother. Aaron returned to the jungle, only to be attacked by a different creature, and the black one reappeared. That's the end of the summary. Enjoy the episode! Mountains Bow Down. Aaron gasped. No! He cried out. Don't hurt me! He scrambled toward the tube, losing his footing more than once on the uneven ground. When he reached it, he turned swiftly with a feeling of dread, fully expecting the paws and mouth of the creature to be upon him. He stretched his hand out toward the button, but stopped short of pushing it, when he saw that the black creature hadn't moved. She stayed on top of the rock, watching Aaron. The rock remained still, also watching Aaron, and then its cave-like mouth moved, and a groaning noise emerged. Aaron's heart thudded. He knew he should push the button, he knew he should get to safety, but he was mesmerized. Where had they been? How did the rock move? And was it speaking to him? In a rumbling voice like distant thunder, the rock spoke. Where's Marcus? Aaron nearly tipped over his own skin. What? The rock repeated the words louder this time. Where's Marcus? Aaron stared. He's dead. The rock grumbled in disbelief, and the dog dropped from the tree branch and started running around howling. The panther lowered her head. Aaron scrambled to read their reactions. He was a good man, wasn't he? I mean, don't you agree? Well, of course, boomed the rock. The dog and the panther seemed to feel the same way. Aaron sighed inwardly in relief. He knew now where they stood. All he had to do was play this game right. We all just miss him terribly, he began. He put me in charge, so I'm checking in on you like he asked me to. I'm sorry it's been a while. There was, a lot to take care of. It was all very sudden, you see. The rock regarded him and rumbled. So you're the boy called Alex? It wasn't a question. And in Aaron's mind, there was barely a moment's hesitation. If being Alex gave him an advantage, then he would be Alex once more. Only here. There was no one to detect the technical physical differences between the boys. Yes, he said. That's me. The enormous rock bowed its craggy peak. I'm sorry to hear of Marcus's death, he said. But he told us about you. He didn't tell me much about you, I'm sorry to say, Aaron said. So, perhaps you could? The rock seemed to frown. I am the caretaker of the dangerous ones, he said in his rumbling voice. Mr. Today's imperfect creations, which are, shall we say, not to be trusted. The panther snarled. The rock continued. Marcus couldn't bear to end it for any of them, so he put them here. Old Tater was here for a time, but that was troublesome. Aaron didn't know who Old Tater was, but he sounded delicious. The rock looked at itself. They can't hurt me, you see. Aaron tried to look sympathetic, though he wasn't very good at it. Did they hurt Mr. Today? No, he had a way with them, like you. You'll do fine. It's putting them out there in Artemy with the others that causes problems. The high priest narrowed his eyes. Away with them? Like me? What an odd thing to say. Well, Aaron said, slightly unsettled. I just wanted to check in and see if all was okay, and it appears it is, so... Wait, thundered the rock, making the nearby leaves tremble on the trees. Panther needs your help. The black creature nodded empathetically. Oh, Aaron said, a little impatiently. Well then, what's wrong? He wanted these creatures to do his bidding, not add to his burdens. It's her tail again. She can't balance in the trees without it. Aaron's eyes opened wide. What? Her tail. She needs you to repair it. Repair it? Me? The rock slid forward almost silently, its eyes wearing a puzzled expression. Of course you. The panther nimbly made her way down the rock and jumped to the ground. She snarled and hissed at Aaron, but sidled up to him, brushing against the boy's hip. Aaron stepped back nervously, one foot in the tube. He could still run for it, disappear forever. But what if? What if he really could get this jungle filled with dangerous creatures to obey him? He wouldn't need an equilitary vehicle to take over Artemis. He'd simply turn Mr. Today's misfits against the unwanteds, and they'd tear them to bits. It was a brilliant plan, if only Aaron had a clue how to fix the panther's tail. Aaron looked at the panther's stubby tail and started to panic. How in Quill was he supposed to fix that? Where's the missing part? He asked. The panther shrugged and looked off into the jungle, disinterested. Sweat broke out on Aaron's forehead as he looked around. How? He faltered, knowing that this moment could solidify his control over these creatures. His eyes darted this way and that. He stared at the panther, trying to figure out what it was made of. But it was all too impossible. Aaron had no idea where to start or what to do. The questions made his head hurt. He couldn't continue with this farce any longer. It was over. XVII. The Sky Vessel. Alex made his way into the Museum of Large, as he liked to do most evenings, leaving the door open in case Simber needed him. But now that things were under control in Artemis once more, it was time to push on to the next task, rescuing Sky and Crow's mother. It seemed impossible, and it was going to be very dangerous, too. "Not exactly sure how we're going to do this rescue thing," Alex murmured as he worked on his favorite task of late, turning Mr. Today's whale skeleton into a beautiful sculpture. This was where Alex did his best thinking, when his hands were busy creating something new. Alex had finally gotten all the bones in place, his after old Tater had scattered them far and wide, only to find there was one long, spear-like bone that didn't seem to belong anywhere at all. Alex debated for a while what to do with it, and then decided to stick it on the whale's forehead, because really, who wouldn't want a big bone spear jutting out of their forehead? It looked extremely cool, too. Alex sharpened the point and studied it with sparkling stones that he found on the beach. They shone like diamonds. Alex mixed up a container of thick, shiny blue liquid, preparing to sweat it over the whale's skin. The skin he made by weaving dried knotted seaweed in a loom, and had used the preserve spell on it, which made the whale virtually indestructible. It had taken the last of Alex's preserve components to cover the enormous animal, but Alex made note to make some more. After a few swipes of the blue paint, Alex stepped back to analyze the color. He wanted to try covering the whale in a mosaic, like Jim the winged tortoise shell, but he would have to save that for another time. It was just too ambitious a project. But the brilliant blue paint looked very good next to the silvery diamond-like stones on the spear. He began painting in broader strokes. "You need a name, I think," Alex said after a while, finishing up the first coat. "Are you a boy or a girl?" He scratched his head. "Spike, no matter what." He thought about it for a bit and nodded to himself. "Yes, I think that's very fitting. Spike." When Alex heard a noise, he looked up, seeing Simber and Miss Octavia coming into the museum. "Interesting," Simber remarked, nodding at the new horn adorning the whale's head. "She didn't have that before." Alex grinned and shrugged. "There was an extra bone. I couldn't figure out where it went, so I gave her an accessory." He tilted his head. "She? It's a girl, then?" Simber rolled his eyes. "Clearly," he said, but he didn't elaborate. "Well, her name is Spike," Alex said. "Spike Furious." He grinned, pleased with the way the name came to him so easily. Miss Octavia snorted. "Don't get carried away, but I admit it has a ring to it. And with the faux diamond treatment to the horn, she needs a name just as grand to go with it. Spike Furious sounds very commanding." She turned a more critical art instructor eye to the project. "You've done a beautiful job painting her." "Thanks," Alex said, beginning the second coat. "Want to help finish?" He tossed a handful of paintbrushes to Miss Octavia, who seemed pleased to be asked. "It's too bad more of your friends can't see her," Miss Octavia said, digging into the job. "That's for sure." Alex was thinking particularly of Skye, who would probably really like Spike, and Lonnie and Meg, too, of course. But they couldn't get into this wing. He'd have to paint a redemption for them, which was hardly the same as seeing Spike's gloriousness in person. There was a noise at the door, bringing Alex back to the moment. "Here they are," Simber said. "We've recovered the sky vessel from the sea. Florence, Karina, Scene, and Sam Heed are bringing the pieces up now. We thought they could go in here with the others. Is that all right? Yes, that's perfect, Alex said. He looked around. They can't set them right there, where the pirate ship was. A moment later, the floor quivered, and Florence entered the museum, carrying a large piece of the vessel. Following her were the others, with smaller broken pieces, some salvaged equipment and other curious-looking goods. Alex and Miss Octavia put down their brushes and hurried over to observe the contents. "What about the passengers?" Alex asked gently. "Buried at sea," Karina said, setting her things down. "Three of them." "We found a lot of interesting stuff," Samheed said. "Papers and more books and clothing, and other things we're not quite sure about." He and Florence spread the goods out across the floor. "Some of it needs to dry out a bit. Mr. Appleblossom is taking care of the papers and the books. He's done this before and knows the best way to care for them without ruining everything." Alex studied the pieces, walking around them to get a full view. He pictured how the pieces fit together to make the vessel. It was larger than he had imagined. There was a long cockpit made of glass and some other strange white material. The cockpit was shaped a little bit like the one of Artemis' tubes, lying on its side. Inside were four seats and an instrumental panel that looked somewhat like a blackboard, with lots of buttons and gauges and letters on it. Some of the glass was broken, but the rest of the vessel seemed like it was in decent shape. Just a few dents. There was one long wing jutting out, and another piece that looked like a second wing that had broken off. At the nose of the vessel, there were several blades attached, like a pinwheel, and a few more loose blades bent and broken that had been recovered from the ocean floor. Simber lopped over to the other pieces in the museum that had been collected years before to compare. "They look similar," he said. "That's what Mr. Appleblossom said, too," Samheed remarked. "He said he did some research in the library, and he thinks this is something called an airplane. I guess there was a manual in the stack of books we found." Alex tapped his lips deep in thought. "Interesting. So it's supposed to stay in the air? Like it flies? How does it ever land safely without crashing? Do you think people just live in these things forever?" "No," Sean said. "Siegfried also said that they are like ships. They just transport people from one place to another, like riding on Simber's back, I suppose."
"Except I would never crash," Simber muttered.
"Easy there, Cat. I've seen you crash," Alex reminded him. "You might not remember it, but it happened." He held his hand to his forehead dramatically. "I'm still traumatized." He was only partly joking. He still had the regular nightmares about Simber's frozen body crashing into the sea. Simber frowned and walked back to the others.
"That won't happen again."
"If it does, I may not survive my grief." Alex reached out and let his hand rest on the cat's neck, in a rare show of deep affection between the two. He thought he could feel Simber purring just the slightest bit, but he wasn't sure.
"Hrrf. Anyway, where do you suppose the airplane came from? And what made it crash?"
Alex was as mystified as everyone else. "No idea." He looked at the pieces again and shrugged. "I guess we just store these here until we can think of something useful to do with them. I wonder if we can restore it, to make it fly again." He looked sidelong at Simber. "You know, in case Simber ever does take another nosedive into the sea, and we need some air transportation." The cat growled.
"We have more important things to do," he said.
"Good point," said Miss Octavia, "and we'll be ready to go soon. Alex, do you have a finalized list of who will be accompanying us?"
"I will by tomorrow."
"Perfect." Later, when everyone had left, Alex stood alone with the whale once more, doing some final touch-ups with the paint, and thinking about the upcoming rescue and the reverse aquarium full of pirates and captives underneath the strangely disappearing fiery volcanic island.
"You know, Spike," he said as he finished, "we could really use somebody like you on this trip." He sighed, imagining it. "If only I knew how to make you come alive."
Certain Death. The High Priest Aaron stood with one toe inside the tube and wiped the sweat from his forehead, commanding himself to pull it together. How was he supposed to fix the panther's tail? He had to do something. If he just turned and escaped through the tube, he'd lose all hope of having these creatures on his side. And at this point, with the Quillitary still not very keen on Aaron because of his role in Justine's death, the High Priest could really use these creatures to take over Artemae. How would that be for giving the Artemans a taste of their own medicine? Aaron was practically drooling over the idea. But all hope would be lost if he failed to fix the tail, he argued with himself, unless he could stall them.
He began. The dog barked and started sniffing around the undergrowth. He barked a few more times and backed out from under a bush, pulling something in his mouth.
"Did you find the tail?"
the giant rock mumbled, rolling closer to the dog and nudging Aaron away from the tube. Aaron stumbled forward. The dog kept tugging at Aaron's hopes sank. Eventually, the dog pulled hard enough to reveal the source of his endeavors. It was a vine.
"There," said the rock.
The panther looked on with disdain that slowly turned into interest. After a moment, she leaped over to the dog's side, snapping it as her dog retreated. Then the panther bit hard on the vine, severing it in two places, to form the right length. She turned and screamed at Aaron, startling him. His nerves frayed. Aaron jumped to pick up the vine as the panther circled him, edging him even farther away from the tube. Aaron knew now there was no way to get out of this. The panther was sure to attack him if he tried to run. Aaron had no choice. He was about to get eaten, or at least ripped to shreds. It would only be a matter of time. Once they figured out he was a phony, it would be all over. The thought of confessing briefly came to mind, but Aaron dismissed it. He wouldn't want to live after showing such cowardice. Bravely, he examined a stretch of vine. He bent down and picked a sharp stone to streamline the tip of it. "For better balance," he said, but he was only buying time. Death was inevitable. The panther paced between Aaron and the tube, switching the stub of her tail in awkward, jerky movements that chronicled her growing impatience. It was becoming extremely clear to Aaron why these creatures were kept away from everyone else. They were living, breathing, procreating, claw and tooth fest, just waiting to explode. Finally, with shaking hands, Aaron beckoned to the panther. "Come here, then," he said, his voice squeaking. He felt the blood drain from his head, and he hoped that, once the creature attacked, he'd simply pass out before the pain took hold. The panther darted to Aaron's side, hissing wide mouths and some bizarre backward show of appreciation. Or maybe just to show Aaron her dripping fangs. Aaron wobbled as he squatted next to the creature, and then he put his hand on the panther's back to steady himself. "Breathe," he whispered, angry about his fear. "Calm down." He took in a few deep breaths. "Okay," he said louder. "Hold still, panther." The creature obeyed. Aaron gripped the panther's shortened tail in one hand and the vine in the other. Knowing all he could do now was wish for the impossible. He pressed the thick end of the tail to the broken end of the panther's tail, wishing and imagining with all his might that a miracle would take place. "Please," he begged under his breath as drops of sweat fell from the dark ringlets framing his eyes. He closed his eyes, knowing it was only a matter of seconds before they realized it was a scam, and only a minute or so then he'd be dead. He swallowed hard and gripped the two parts in his swept, damp hands. "Come on," he said. "Heal up. Just please magically heal." Aaron wanted it so badly he could almost feel the two pieces melt into one inside his grip. But he knew it was impossible, and he couldn't bear to look at his failure. Soon the strain of the silent anticipation and tension grew so unbearable that he slowly let go. Crippled and faint with fear, Aaron dropped backward onto the jungle floor and bared his neck, giving up. He hoped only for a merciful kill. The panther's scream echoed, chilled Aaron's blood, and he knew his wait was over. Everything went black. When Aaron opened his eyes, the panther's face was right back in front of him, her ivory teeth just inches from his neck. Slimy drool dripped from the panther's jaws. Aaron emitted a blood-curdling cry, choking on the dryness in his throat. The panther jumped back. Aaron screamed again, and then, when he realized he wasn't dead, lurched wildly to his feet and lunged, disoriented in the wrong direction, running smack into the corner of the giant rock and falling flat on his face. Stunned, he got to his feet and tried again, the rock moving out of his way just in time. Aaron tripped over a vine and fell, and then, after finally locating the tube, he restored to scrambling on his hands and knees toward it. The rock, panther, and dog all began to shout and howl. The panther charged after Aaron. As Aaron dove into the tube, he turned and looked at his pursuer. And as he reached for the button, he noticed one very interesting thing. The panther's tail. Long and supple, the tail swished back and forth as the panther bounded past Aaron, around the tube, and up the nearby tree to test out her balance. Aaron stared from his sprawled-out position at the bottom of the tube, his chest heaving, sweat pouring off him. He wiped his eyes to see better, and it was true. Somehow, he'd done it. Without any components, without uttering any magical chants or spells, Aaron had turned a vine into a tail. As the howling and the yelling around him subsided, as the realization of what he'd done took hold, and as the new surge of power coursed through his veins, Aaron Stowe closed his eyes and leaned his head against the glass, thinking, "I'm going to take over the world." XIX. The Book. Alex stared at Spike. He couldn't get the thought out of his mind. Later, when he was walking along the shore with Skye, looking at the beautiful orange moonlight that matched her eyes, his mind kept returning to it. What if Spike really could come to life? He thought back to the day in Mr. Today's office, when he told the old maid she didn't want to take over Artemis. "If only I had told him I wanted the job," he muttered. "If only I hadn't been so selfish. I could have found out how to do it. But no, I refused the job, and he refused to teach me. And now it's too late." Skye looked at him. "You're doing that thing again. Mage problems." Alex startled, then laughed under his breath. "Yeah." "What is it this time?" Her voice rang curious, and not all annoyed, which reminded Alex just how much he liked Skye. She no longer seemed to resent the time he spent preoccupied with his other thoughts. She had plenty of her own thoughts to be busy with, so they made a good pair. Alex picked up a stick and sat down and began to sketch the whale in the sand as he talked. "I made this whale out of old bones in the Museum of Large. It started out as a project to clean up the museum after the old tater incident. But once I had all the bones in place, I covered the skeleton with layers of woven seaweed to give it a body. Then I preserved it and painted it, and earlier I realized she would really come in handy if she could swim along with us to Pirate Island." "Cool. I wish I could see her." She sat down in the sand next to Alex.
"Me too."
"Can't you just bring her to life, like Mr. Today did with Jim and Florence and Simba and all the statues?"
"I wish I knew how."
Skye wrinkled up her nose, thinking. "What about the book Mr. Today left you? The one with the restore spell? I remember how disgusted you were that he left it out for you, just a little too late to be useful when we lost Artemis."
Alex frowned. "I don't think that spell would bring the whale sculpture to life. It wasn't living before."
"Yeah, probably not. Or else the mansion and the fountains would be alive now, I guess, too."
She grinned and leaned against Alex. He loved it when she did that.
"Wouldn't that be creepy?" He slipped his arm around her shoulders, and they sat in silence for a few minutes, lost in thoughts again. Then Alex scrambled to his feet.
"Wait a second," he said. "That book!" He started running from the mansion, then stopped abruptly to turn around and run back to Skye.
"I've got to go," he said, grabbing her hand and pulling her to her feet. "I think there's a living type of spell in that book. It was called the Triad or something or the other. I think Liv was on one of the sections."
Skye laughed.
"See? I knew you'd figure it out. Go on, then," she said, shooing him away. "Don't come back until you have a real live whale."
"I won't," Alex said, but he didn't move. He just looked at her, his stomach flipping all over the place.
"You're kind of brilliant, you know that?"
Skye tilted her head, a smile playing on her lips.
"I know," she said.
It reminded Alex of the time they were on the roof of the shack together, figuring out Mr. Today's riddle. His skin tingled and a rush of good feeling surged through him, and she didn't look away. Without thinking, Alex reached his hand out to touch her cheek, and then he leaned in and kissed her.
"Thanks," he said, grinning when he pulled back and saw a startled look on her face. He turned away and ran toward the mansion, leaving Skye blushing alone in the moonlight.
Alex found the book on the dresser in his room, The Triad, Live, Hide, Restore. He'd been meaning to read it ever since Simba showed it to him, but it wasn't like Alex had a lot of spare time lately. Now it felt like he didn't have time not to read it. He climbed into bed and paged the first section.
Live.
History. It is with a heavy heart that I begin this book. When one thinks about life, one hopes for a good one. Simba, Florence, and Miss Octavia, among others, are epitome of successful creations. Creatures with good lives. Unfortunately, I have also given a less than perfect life to a number of creatures, and I wish to chronicle their evolutions here, so that my successor is able to learn from my mistakes and hopefully not repeat them. All my longings, my needs, my desires went in Simba. I was lonely and needed a companion, and as I created him, I thought about all that was missing in my life. It was with love that I first breathed life into Simba, and he took on the very essence of my thoughts and dreams. As Simba was my first creature, I thought I was quite perfect at bringing creatures to life. Excited and enthused, I began a series of creatures in quick succession, thinking that if Simba was this wonderful, wouldn't a dozen more creatures be a dozen times more wonderful? But it was not to be. I made a little dog, but he attacked without provocation. I have teeth marks and scars to prove it. Then a panther. Yes, a wonderful, beautiful creature. I designed her as a friend for Simba, but while she could understand me, she refused to speak. She was violent and grew to resent Simba for his closeness with me, and she became a threat. I created a scorpion that, for reasons unknown, grew to an enormous size, and a few other creatures, just trying to recreate what I had with Simba. But I had used all of my heart at that time for the cheetah. I'm afraid it took me too long to realize it, and to admit that my creatures were failures.
When I finally realized what had come from the inside of me in order to make a successful life, I had a dozen monsters on my hands, including old Tater, who terrorized everything and made everyone miserable. Even himself, and eventually he asked to be put to sleep. But truly none of them were to be safe to be around, so for their protection and my own, I had to isolate them, which I did with a heavy heart. They now live in the deepest part of the jungle, so deep that only their caretaker and the only other know the way out. The jungle is one of the places where the tube and the kitchenette will take you. Because of the danger, I didn't wish for anyone to accidentally find himself in the jungle, so to visit there, you must push all the buttons at once. Be warned, the creatures are dangerous. If they know you are visiting with my blessing, there is a chance they will not attack. But I have been kind and they've grown to love me, at least a little bit, I think. And if you use your magic to hold them back, you will fare well. As dangerous as it is, I'd like you to visit them now and then to see if anyone needs anything. There's a good chance Panther will have lost her tail. A vine will do the trick. Magic. The live and restore spells have one thing in common. Both can be found in the dot art that hangs in my office. The art is intuitive, which does mean that I need the world to be restored. The dots in the pictures in the mansion model, found in the kitchen cupboard in the gray shack, contain the magical words breathe, commence, etc. See restore section. But if Artemis exists, the art on my office walls hides the magical words for the live spell. So all you need to do is study the art from right to left, or as the setting sun, opposite from the restore spell. And you'll see the words you will need to bring a creature to life. Initiate, invigorate, instill, improve. Here there was some writing in the margins. Alex turned the book sideways to read the words. Part 2. For best success regarding the improve portion, add comfort, happiness, peace, success, and a final line in a shake your hand which looked like it had been written late in Mr. Today's life. Part 3. Loyalty, devotion, zeal, intensity, fury. And in the tiniest print next to the crossed out word, no, passion. Use passion instead.